Hi everyone, welcome back to episode 18. We are reviewing episodes 3 and 4, so Death, Be Not Proud to a Most Uncomfortable Woman. This was a really enjoyable episode to record. We hope you enjoy it, and as always, like and subscribe and send us your thoughts and reviews and follow us on Insta. Enjoy the episode.
We all have our favourite shows, but there's always something that comes along that means you like it a little less. The technical term is the Scrappy-Doo effect. Two friends create a safe space to talk about their favourite show, Outlander, all the things they love about it and some of the things they hate. Although we all love Outlander, there are things we hate. Admit it, there's always something. So we've created a safe space, a space for all Outlander lovers to share their dark secrets, but mainly it's a space to share ours. Every week, we'll discuss episodes, their themes, feminism, what we love, and every week we'll talk about something we hate. Roger. Yep, we hate him. But let's be clear, we don't hate Rick Rankin. We have a clear grasp on reality. So join us, gentle viewer. Join Sharon and Ruth, two England-based Outlander fans, as they discuss love, hate, and time travel.
Great. We're back. Episode 18.
Hello, good evening. Episode 18.
We're here.
Season 7, episodes 3 and 4.
We're getting well into it, and the drama isn't stopping.
Oh, I mean, it's so hectic.
It's literally so much in here.
Hello, so listeners. Much. Sorry, we're just diving straight in. Hope you're all well. Welcome back to season 7 with us and the slightly different format of 2 episodes per pod. I'm assuming Everybody else is feeling the drama of season 7 like we are.
Yeah. And also feeling slightly lost now that it's taking a break as well.
Yeah, because obviously we are recording these quite late and we're already into the break for season 7. But we won't jump ahead. We won't jump ahead to those episodes. We'll stay with episodes 3 and 4.
And hopefully it gives you an opportunity to rewatch them with us, even though you might have only watched them a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Because there's a lot going on. There's loads of new characters. I feel like there's kind of lots of threads wrapped up and then lots of new things started.
Yeah. And also we're now in the present, we're in the present day properly now as well.
Yeah, so we're now following, and obviously we have done this in the past, but of Bree and Roger in the 1980s.
Mm.
So we've skipped forward a little bit.
Yeah.
With the little kid being...
Jimmy is
obviously
older.
Recovered. Mandy is recovered and they're both older. So it's 1980s in Scotland and then still the 1700s, 18th century in America.
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't know what was going to happen with Bree and Roger going back. I was like, oh, do we not see? Because obviously, again, and, you know, our regular listeners know this, we haven't read the book, so we don't know. But I was wondering, oh, is this, you know, are they saying goodbye?
That was just wishful thinking, Sharon.
I was like, so thoughtlessly, abandoned Fergus and Worsley. Are they going to abandon another two characters?
If only.
But no, they didn't. So I was wondering, okay, where will this lead us? And the parallel between the letters actually as a tool to flash back and forth is quite nice. It's a style that we haven't seen before. Yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting way to, and we're also hearing not only Claire's inner, you know, thoughts and feelings, but Jamie is obviously writing these letters as well. So it's a style that they haven't used before, and not so much as narrating the episode, but as a kind of a story, as a story to tell.
The letters obviously introduce kind of the cliffhanger from the previous episode of the fire.
Yeah.
So we are, you know, we start with the kind of mystery box being delivered.
Yeah, yeah, they're in Scotland, and it's.
I'm not going to pick apart whether or not I would trust a bank and the postal system to, you know, we're not going to pick apart the fact that that box has survived two wars in America.
Yeah. That's so
true.
We're
not going to go there. We're just going to trust that that has all been fine. And the box has now arrived in Scotland.
Into their hands.
Into their hands. And we start to see what happened in the last, what happened as a result of the explosion that ended episode two.
Yeah, that was,
And the fallout from that.
Yeah, and which is devastating to watch. It's very quick, but it's really seeing, you know, their whole lives just burn in front of them is quite sad. And you're wondering kind of what's going to happen next, and then suddenly this, and also we're left with the bugs, like finding that gold in the middle of all of that.
Let's just dive into that, shall we?
Jamie just confronts them again, going, "What the fuck just happened?"
Let's just get into this. The bugs, who have always been quite minor characters, a little bit kind of comedic and annoying because they're a bit gossipy and a bit kind of judgy.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're some kind of freedom fighters in Scotland, and then they've been pinching gold back and burying it under the house.
It's so random. It's just so, like, apart from Mrs. Bug's last, you know, helping them to bury your man, and then suddenly now they've got this connection with Dougal and the Camerons, and you're like, what? Yeah. What?
And then they're all kind of, oh, what have they done for us? It's our gold. And it's like, where is all this coming from?
And where is it leading to?
And then it just feels like they want to create almost like, and I feel like they kind of do in Mr. Bug, a bit of a pantomime villain.
It's all a bit creepy, and I know what you mean. Yeah, the main thing from that was I just felt really sorry for Ian being left with dealing with the murder of Mrs. Bug, and that was just really sad. But yeah, like you say, that's a really good description of like that pantomime thing of him like threatening Ian, and you're like, what the fuck's happening here? We were just dealing with the gold a minute ago and the bear, and now suddenly we're having to worry about Ian and Ian meeting someone. This is very stressful. And now Ian's dog.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say this. Don't threaten Rollo.
No, don't threaten Rollo.
Don't go down that horror film trope of threatening the animal.
Don't leave the animal out of this.
But
I've been stressed out about him since the day he came on the scene.
Exactly. I just found that all... I don't know, it didn't quite sit right for me. It felt a little bit melodramatic.
Yeah.
It just felt like it'd come out of nowhere. Especially because, like, the bugs had been not really particularly well-rounded characters before.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're sort of thrust centre stage and they're still a bit too dimensional for me. I wasn't a fan of all of that, I won't lie.
And
this isn't funny, but it made me laugh. Was like when it's Mrs. Bug's funeral and Lizzie said something like, well, now the graveyard will have a new guardian.
A
new keeper or whatever the word was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Claire says, oh, what do you mean by that? And they explain. And then Lizzie goes, I wonder who the last person was to be buried there. It's like, not that much time has gone by.
I know. Did you not remember the drama that we...
I mean, literally, Claire was going to get hung.
She's like, Lizzie, come on, keep up. Is she currently pregnant with her second child? I can't remember.
You might be a bit befuddled because you've just had one kid and now you're pregnant again. But come on.
I know. Oh, it was. It is that. That was funny. And it was a kind of is this a roundabout way of the gold being in the picture?
Yeah.
Just creating this random side story.
Yeah. It feels very forced.
Yeah. For the whole, what's to come.
It becomes a narrative device in the future as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you're just wondering. So it was all a bit random, but I did. Yeah, the clear up of the aftermath of the fire is all quite sad and devastating, and yeah, seeing Lizzie and Josiah being really sweet and, you know, being their really sweet selves is quite nice.
Yeah,
and helping out, and like when Claire is like, oh no, what's wrong, and they're like looking at each other and like as if saying, yeah, who's gonna tell her about Adzo, you're just like, oh bless them, they're just so like to understand how much Adzo means to her is just really sweet, rather than being kind of dismissive, which feels like something that might be of that time. But yeah, and then we obviously Claire, oh sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say one good thing that comes out of all of Jamie's clothes being destroyed in the fire is that for some reason his tartans are safe in a chest, no burning, and he's back in his kilt, baby.
Back in his kilt. Yes. Love it. Love Jamie in a kilt. And they're also then moved back into the cabin that they obviously first start like built in Fraser's Ridge, and there's that unusual. I've seen this actually. I don't know if you've seen this pop up on any social media, but when Jamie describes his dreams, which are really, I just wonder what's going on there. It's all very strange the way he says, like, this woman Fiona is there. It's like, why? What's going on? And then when he describes her. I think this was in the last episode when he describes her in the light, and he was like, there's a light shining on your face, and it's come up. I'm sure the listeners know what I'm talking about as well. And it's come up in a few social media posts that he's basically describing that scene where in episode one, where Frank comes across a man staring up at her.
He comes across the Highlander. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he's saying there's a light surrounding your face, and it's basically what Jamie's describing in that is what the Highlander would have seen in that window.
In that window,
of this light shining on her face. So yeah, I'm just kind of going, what's going on here? What's being unpicked? Why? And the way when he describes seeing the telephone and Jemmy on the telephone, he describes the telephone very specifically, and she's like, that's a telephone. I'm like, what are they doing?
I think it's interesting because obviously up until then, it's kind of like all of them have got a sort of magical connection of being able to go through the stones, and he doesn't have that. Yeah. And now he's got sort of I'm going to say it's magical because it is really his own kind of magical ability in like dreaming the future.
Mm.
And I wonder if that's going to, I wonder how that's going to play out, if that's going to have any kind of active role other than him just kind of dreaming about the future.
Yeah.
So,
is it giving him something that he hasn't been ever given before?
And I wonder if it's something specifically, because he never talked about that when him and Claire were separated.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
So I wonder if it's maybe something to do with the children. I don't know. That was what I was thinking, because they have got that connection to one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wonder if that's something to do with him. That was kind of what was going through my head.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. So that was interesting. And something that I actually didn't pay much attention to until the second time I watched it. I was just dismissive of it the first time, and then I was like, well, he just said Fiona, why would he know her name? So yeah. And then obviously Jamie gets pulled back into war again, which is classic. But I think Tom and Claire, do they have a reunion first, or is that after that? I think it's after that.
I think, well, so they decide to go to Scotland, don't they? So Fraser's Ridge is burnt down, they decide to go to Scotland, they travel to wherever they travel to, Wilmington. I can't keep up with these places. Apologies, Americans. And I think they kind of almost happen in parallel. He's having the conversation about sort of being conscripted, and then Claire bumps into Tom Christie.
Yeah.
Who kisses her.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, very, for those listeners who are football, not American football, the rest of the planet football, who are football fans, and in particular women's football fans, we are in the midst of an unsolicited kiss from a man on a woman. And that was the first thing that struck me, was like, Claire looks kind of amused and befuddled. I'm a bit like that. What the fuck do you think you're doing, mate?
Yeah. And Jamie does bring that up.
Yeah.
He does bring that up afterwards. He says he essentially assaulted you.
Yeah.
Jamie says that. And then Claire tries to, and he says, because then he says something like, you know, do you want me to do something about it? And she's like, Jamie, stop it. But he does say it.
She sees it as more of like amusing. And I go back to my previous point in our last episode about how Tom Christie is being presented in this season.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely I felt that very much when they left each other. So like initially you're just like, there's what's supposed to be amusing, but again, I was the same. I was like, he essentially just assaulted her. And then when he leaves her, there is this very sad, it's a really sad goodbye. The music, his face is very much pained. And, you know, he says, like, when he thought she had died in the fire, he finally had some peace. But he says, I shall have no peace while you live. And then, like, knowing that she's still alive and obviously that he can't have her, I guess. And then he says, but I don't say I regret it. And then he leaves her and she's like, and you're supposed to be, and then you're like left there as an audience member going, and what? Like, what am I supposed to do? Feel sorry for him?
Exactly. Because the music that's playing is as though you are supposed to be upset about this and sad for him. But I'm sorry that kind of talk is proper crazy stalker weirdo talk.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, I'm always going to be sad because I was all right when I thought you were dead. How is that okay to say that?
And the first thing he asks is Jamie still alive? And she's like, oh yeah. And then he's like, oh, I'm glad he's well. It's like, fuck, you're glad.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
are no more
liar.
Glad. You absolute liar. Not true. The only thing that was interesting about that, I guess, is we find out that Tom, you know, put the obituary in the paper.
Yes.
And interesting, which obviously Claire immediately is like, oh, holy shit, this is where that came from.
Yeah.
And that without Tom doing that, would Jamie have ever met Bree? Is what's really interesting, because would she have ever come across that, and would she have ever gone back into the past? And, you know, it's a really interesting thing, is like, is Tom responsible for Jamie and Bree having that relationship and meeting and seeing each other and all that? So that was the most complex and interesting part of that.
And also, and now I'm going to flip between the 1980s and the 18th century. So you've got Bree and Roger reading the letter, and when they read the letter that they've survived the fire, she says, we changed history. And we'll circle back to what Roger said in a minute.
Yeah.
But she said, we changed history. But obviously what Tom Christie revealing is that they didn't change history.
Actually. Yeah.
It played out exactly as it had, which was he posted it not knowing the date, not knowing that they were dead or not. So history hadn't been changed. And I think that comes up more often. And I think we as audience members are realizing this way sooner than they are, considering that we're, you know, 30 years into Outlander time now. They haven't changed one bit of history.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it does come up again in a few episodes' time about this, about the war and stuff. And
yeah.
And you are like, yeah, don't worry, guys. You're not, nothing's going to change. So just keep doing you. So it feels like, yeah, that's.
Yeah, so that was the thing that I thought sort of stood out as well, that him revealing that showed that they hadn't made any difference and hadn't changed history.
I think, yeah, so that was quite interesting. And actually, even though like we're left with going, why the fuck am I feeling sorry for this man, or supposed to feel sorry for this man?
I mean, I didn't feel sorry for him. I felt outraged.
No, exactly.
And furious.
It's like more the what they expect you to feel. But like, was Jamie's, just the joy of Jamie's reaction was just the most rewarding part of that whole meeting.
Yeah.
Just like, his reaction is so funny when, you know, he does address it. He says, he assaulted you, Sasnach. And then she's like, oh, stop it. And then what is hilarious is like, did you like it? Had I better kill him? It's so funny. And then, but then like, she's talking about, she says something like, oh, because he thinks he's in love with me, you know, which is very, and then he's like, don't belittle his feelings. It's quite funny the way he's really sensitive to his feelings, which we all know is because he understands what it's like to be in love with her. And I think he's quite passionate about that feeling. And I think he, you know, that, which is why he speaks so strongly about it, saying, you know, don't belittle how he feels, because I understand that. But it's all very lighthearted and very sweet and very funny. And it leads us into this really humorous and very funny sex scene where they're dirty talking, and it's very funny. And she talks about being jealous, and then brings up Leary, and I just thought that was very funny.
Yeah, it's a great kind of I suppose it, and I think again, this is, you know, we've talked about this in the special, and we've talked about it through as we've gone through all of this, but it's that evolution of their relationship from getting to know each other and that kind of passion, but not knowing each other, and the kind of clumsiness of sex that you get at the beginning, to that kind of confidence and knowing each other, and the kind of, you know, the fact that you can bring humor into sex because you neither of you are kind of as uneasy, and you know, and you know, and like, I think this is what plays out with them too so often, is that they know what turns one another on.
Yeah.
And humor is a big sort of teasing, is a big part of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a great kind of sex scene for them as a couple that have been together for as long as they have, still desire each other, but have that much more kind of confident familiarity with each other. Really, I suppose it's what made me think of. So yes, I really enjoyed that. I thought it was really great.
It was really good, and there was like a really nice element to it about he was saying, you know, he kissed you, and he doesn't even know you, and it was, and then obviously she pushes that back at him, saying, you know, you married me and you didn't even know me.
Yeah,
and he's quite protective almost of it. He's like, I did, you know, he does feel quite strongly about the fact that, you know, I did know you. And he grabs her arse at the same time, you know, and she's like, yeah, apart from that, she's like, did you even know who I was? And, you know, so it brings, I love the way they kind of go back to that time of their lives and reflect on it. It's quite sweet. And it's just a bit nostalgic, almost like making them slightly more human. It's like, people get jealous, and they're bringing that up is really interesting. You know, he's like, you know, you were jealous of Leary, and he was like, and I liked it, and it's like that playing on people's insecurities and what jealousy does, and how it, you know, and they're bringing how they brought that into an interesting thing to bring into their sex life. But it fits in
with all their other stuff, you know, like when they get really angry, and when they're, you know, their sort of dominant submission, it's just a variation of that to some degree,
definitely.
I think that's some of the best writing that's done. The writing around their relationship and around their relationship and sex, they really think a lot about it, and they think about where will they be now after all this time, and what are the buttons that they can push with each other kind of thing. It's great. So yeah, but yeah, I'm not having Tom Christie as a sympathetic character. That's it. I'm not accepting it.
Yeah.
No matter how much Agreed. They try to manipulate me into thinking he should be sympathetic.
We are back to Brian Rogers a little bit. It's all a bit random because they keep talking about pixies and the Nuklevi, and it's all a bit kind of like random and not very exciting, apart from the one scene with Bree applying for the job.
Yeah, which is, I mean, we get them obviously buying Lallybroch.
Yeah, the massive castle.
And, you know, again, where are they getting all their money from?
Where are they getting the cash?
They've not even been in the modern day for however many years, 5 years. Where are they getting all the money from? But you know, I'm sure castles were not particularly expensive in the 1980s, especially falling down ones. So they've bought Lallybroch and they're doing Lallybroch up. And yeah, and then she... is going to go back to work as, I can't remember what it is, a site engineer or whatever.
Yeah, safety something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, yeah, we get a nice kind of, you know, her being her mother's daughter kind of balance.
You very much see that in that scene with the, whatever, the manager of the dam. You see real strong side of Claire, which is quite humorous. And yeah, but we are left with this whole random, yeah, it's just a bit different, all this chat with Jemmy about the pixies and Nuklevi, and you're like, where is this going? But it's not massively exciting what's happening in present day, really, up until then. It's more kind of like what's happening with Ian and Claire and Jamie, really.
Yeah, it's yeah, Brian Rogers' storyline is very much in the domestic space sort of thing, like them getting used to, and like you say, you've got Jemmy and talking about pixies and so on. But, you know, they're very much in a sort of domestic and, you know, not a great deal of action. Whereas you've got Claire and Jamie and Ian basically having their plan of going back to Scotland kind of thwarted, and they're back.
How can I be of service?
Yeah.
I know, I will use my body to protect all of you. No, Jamie, no. We've talked about this before. Stop using your body to protect people. It's too precious.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, they're off to war again. And then obviously Ian heads off by himself, and that's when Ian and William, yeah.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think this is where we're starting to bring William in as a character with his own storyline, whereas obviously we haven't had that before. His storyline has always been wedded to, you know, visiting Jamie and Claire or whatever it might be, and now you've got him with his own storyline.
Yeah,
and you know, he goes off on his secret mission, falls off his horse, hurts his arm, is in a swamp. Young Ian finds him, saves him, and then we get two more new characters introduced who help save William, with a potential kind of a bit of a spark between Ian and
Rachel.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm not loving William as a character.
No. I mean, we didn't love him in the beginning, did we? But we thought it might improve with age.
He's all right. I mean, I will make my point, and as we make our point regularly, why couldn't we just keep Fergus and Leary? Why couldn't we keep them? We preferred them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not loving William.
No, I mean, obviously we've watched up to episode 8.
Yeah.
And we're waiting for, something to happen. But I'm just wondering, is it, there's obviously there, there's a part of us all going, where is Jamie in him? And we're trying to unpick that part.
And we're getting told that, you know, we get told that
by Claire and stuff.
Yeah, we're getting keep saying, oh, you can see him in you and all this sort of stuff. And but I suppose what we've also got, and I don't know, it'd be interesting, and I would, you know, I think it might be interesting to get kind of American listeners' perspective on this. But yes, he's Jamie's son, but he's also, in terms of like the class system in
Britain, deeply privileged.
He's like deeply, deeply privileged. He's coming from a place of such privilege and such kind of certainty of his views, of his position. You know, just look at how he talks about the revolution and Americans, you know, exercising their freedom, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
And I suppose, and I think this is maybe the thing for me, he's gonna have to do something to make me to sort of dismantle that privilege a little bit. And I don't feel like that's happening. I mean, just falling in a swamp and hurt his arm, that's not enough.
No. And I completely agree. That is literally what I was thinking and going to say was the exact same thing. It's like, I don't understand how a lifetime of privilege can be removed in any way, really, unless you deeply seek it out. Seek out a life beyond that privilege.
Yeah. And you acknowledge it as well.
And you acknowledge and understand it. I can't see how he would change that part of him.
No.
Doesn't matter who biologically your parents are.
No, exactly.
That means fuck all. Like, I mean,
exactly.
There's so many studies done about nature versus nurture and all that kind of shit. But like, he has essentially been raised also we know this, right? Because Jamie spent the first 5 years of William's life trying to take that out of him. And especially given that he spent a great deal of time around Jamie. And he still didn't seem to inherit any of what Jamie was trying to do, or Jamie was trying to inherit in him and teach him and all the really important things of being a human being. And we have that, you know, that confrontation where he slaps him on the bottom or something for being really, really naughty. And because he really was, and he, you know, he kept telling putting Jamie in his place with his, even at that age of five.
Exactly. And so, I think they make a misstep as well. I think they think the scene where he, and I'm air quoting here, stands up to the other soldiers who murder that woman, the sex worker. I don't think that is as convincing as they think it is. Because at the end of the day, he didn't do anything until she's been set on fire and then she's dead.
Yeah. And he literally, because when he comes out, he knows there's something wrong, fucking react immediately.
Yeah. And he doesn't react until that bad thing has happened. And I know people will say, well, what is he supposed to do? There's loads of them. Well, he speaks up when it's happened. So why can't he speak up to stop it happening?
Yeah. And it's almost like a bit Roger-y, where he's like, oh, exactly. What else was he supposed to do? And you're like, no.
And I think, you know, I think we are supposed to think that he has got some of Jamie in him, and he does stand up to people because then he gets given his secret mission. But I don't feel like that's as impressive as they think it is.
I don't know. Do they want us to think it's impressive, though? I don't know. I don't know yet. I don't know what they want us to think about William, because we aren't really impressed, and he's not exactly very brave. I mean, no, he wants to go on the secret mission, but like when it comes down to war, he's not very brave. And I'm wondering, are we supposed to be in that in between? Are we supposed to be torn is he supposed to be this, you know, he is raised in this way. Yeah. And I wonder, are they showing us what privilege is? You know, is there some message in that? Does it matter who your father is?
And I think it's interesting because in a way you, to some degree, you have him, and I know young Ian's older than him, but not by that much.
Yeah, can't be by that much, yeah.
You have young Ian presented, I think, as a kind of comparator because obviously he saves him and Ian is the better kind of heir apparent, for want of a better word, to Jamie than William is. Because he's not, I don't find him, you know, I don't think he's particularly questioning of anything. He doesn't question his own privilege. He doesn't question anything that's happening.
Yeah, he doesn't question the British Army or what they're trying to do. He just goes along with it.
And that might change. But I feel like that a conversation that happens in episode 5, which I won't touch on, but a conversation that happens in episode 5 with Rachel and her brother kind of reinforces his kind of rigidity of his position. So I'm not feeling William.
Yeah. And you're right with when it comes to Ian, he definitely does feel, and it was because it was brought up by Big Ian in a previous episode. But he's like, you're not, you know, you're right, you're not his father. And because, I you know, Jenny and Ian have a lot of kids, but obviously, you know, young Ian is the one he's been always drawn to and has nurtured him. And, you know, obviously we don't know what's gone on before we come into, you know, him coming back after, you know, wherever he was, when he was in Edinburgh and all that kind of stuff and what happened in between. But there was clearly something there where Jamie's a huge influence on Ian's life. Absolutely. And only for the better. And it's made him into the man that he is. Not that, you know, we all love Ian and Jenny and their influence is obviously there too. But we can see that, what that does. And Jamie isn't his biological father.
Yeah.
So you can see how nurture versus nature right there.
Exactly.
In front of your eyes. You're looking at, in the same screen, someone who's been nurtured by Jamie and someone who's naturally Jamie's son.
Yeah.
And you can see which one of them is Jamie.
Ian has inherited that kind of openness, that adaptability to different cultures and different societies and that understanding, you know, he learns about Claire being from the future and accepts that. And, you know, so I do think you are supposed to draw the parallels between young Ian and Jamie as, you know, kind of more like a father and a son than an uncle and a nephew. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with William as if he, now that we know he's going to be a main character, how and if they develop him.
Yeah. I wonder is the effect of war going to influence him in any way.
You know, I'm gonna cite another character that we didn't love and that hasn't changed. Roger.
Get a little bit of Rachel and what's his first name? Is it Denzel?
Yeah, I think it
is. They call him that, Denzel. Yeah, we get a little bit of them. And obviously more so in the fact that it's the fact that we can see a spark between Ian and Rachel. And we're all wondering, where is this going? So it's nice to see something happening for Ian as well, as fearful as we are, given Mr. Bug's threat. We knew it had to come from somewhere. And there's a little bit of a hint that William might be interested as well at the end of the episode.
I think we might be getting a bit of a love triangle.
And also, like, why the fuck is she shaving his face? But that's like a really irritating really irritating. She's just like, he's just sitting there and she's shaving.
They're obsessed with people not having beards in the 18th century.
So do it yourself.
But he's got an injured arm, hasn't he? So I think that's the idea.
I mean, it's pretty much, it's just a little scar at this stage. But yeah. That just pissed me off a little bit. But anyway, yeah. So we do see a little hint of a love triangle starting, which is interesting.
Definitely.
Between Jamie's two sons, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
And Rachel. But yeah, so that'll be interesting. Yeah, kind of gets wrapped up at that stage then. It's pretty much the three of them all leave, don't they?
Rachel, but we don't get the next bit of their journey, do we, till the next episode. Five, I don't
yeah.
think. But I don't and I think we get, it, I think it finishes with just like them
heading off to
Ticonderoga.
Ticonderoga, yeah. That's where it finishes. Yeah, we just see a kind of a drone.
View of what that is. We're basically introduced to the war, as it were. And that's our stepping off point for episode
then
4.
Jamie and Claire stepping right into it.
Yeah, getting right back in the thick of it.
No messing.
We've already literally had a near hanging, fires, explosions, and now we're just back in a war.
Yeah, Jamie heading in from the front line. And I think we've mentioned a few feminist themes already, and like one of the big things you mentioned was the scene with the sex worker, which is incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. I just feel really like brutal. Again, and I know I bang on about these things, but they are important, so I am going to keep banging on about them. It is just used. So a woman's assault and murder is just used as a narrative tool to make a male character look more sympathetic.
Yeah, it's really brutal.
And I think it's really horrible, and especially as it involves like one of the most vulnerable groups in society, sex workers, still one of the most vulnerable groups now, but will have been phenomenally vulnerable then. Mm-hmm. And it's a horrible scene. And it's just used to make William look, and I'm air quoting heavily here, heroic, even though he don't fucking do anything because she's dead.
Mildly heroic.
It's you know, when are they going to stop using violence against women as a narrative device to just drive the narrative forward? And that's my big problem with that scene.
Yeah,
big problem.
Dead right. Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
it's not feminist, so they need to learn. Listen to our podcast from the very beginning, Outland producers, and you'll understand what you're doing wrong.
Absolutely, yeah. And we see a bit of Bree navigating 1980s in Scotland, which is really interesting. Yeah, we touched on this, but like we said, it keeps going for her, so that's going to be an interesting narrative as we go forward.
Yeah, exactly. She gets, and I think it's not even just this will lead us nicely into talking about how much we hate Roger. It's not just like the kind of traditional male workplace and then how she has to navigate that, but then it's also her husband's response to it.
Yeah,
of wanting to, I hate this phrase, wanting to be the breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of want to go, well, nothing's stopping you.
Yeah.
You bought a castle. You've obviously got money. Get a nanny. You know what I mean? it's his response of like jealousy and using the kind of lameness of, oh, your dad told me to,
Yeah. And it's just like, I'm sorry, but when either of them said that to you, they weren't talking about this shit.
No, they weren't talking about this shit at all. And if I'm honest, they probably only said it to make you feel better, because we all know who's going to be the one doing the looking after.
It's just, yeah, exactly. It's like, what really bugged me about that is, like, she's so thrilled. She just kicked ass that day. Mm. You know, she was so, like, brave saying, you know, what she did. It was, you know, it was clearly quite shocking for the time. And she accomplished something in that alone. But not only that, she also got the job. And now you're making it all about you and your fucking ridiculous feelings. It's just like,
and making it like, I wanted to be the breadwinner. I promised you mum and dad. It's not about that at all. It's yet again about Roger's fragile ego.
Yeah, it's just like, just just be supportive.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah, it really was so irritating. So irritating. So yeah, that goes between the feminist theme of everything that Bree's like trying to fight and work against to achieve what she wants to achieve, and then Roger being a complete another dick.
Yeah. So there was a lot. Yeah. I mean, and so let's just like segue straight into how much we still hate him. That was a big one.
Yeah,
I felt like another bit that made my blood boil was when she says about them changing history. So they're reading the letter and they realise that the parents haven't died in fire, and she's like, "We changed history," and then he's like, "It was you and your mother that nearly killed them. You with your matches and your mother with the," and I just thought it was such a weird thing to say. And then he's like, "How did the 18th century survive you?" And it's just, oh, I just find it so strange and weird, and
he says it in a real
aggressive
weird way, like that. He pushes his face into her face, and then he just jumps back off the couch, and you're like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, it's you know, it's your like it's your fault kind of thing, you women. And I just, that made me hate him 1,000 times more than I normally do.
Yeah, that was really irritating. Really irritating. So yeah, he's definitely not going down. It's not getting better, actually. I think this season is like fucking into the stratosphere of the, like, it was kind of leveling out a bit, and then.
Yeah, it was. And then, you know, the next few episodes, you know, it doesn't improve, just to warn your listeners. our hatred of Roger will continue.
It'll definitely continue. And yeah, Bree's getting more interesting though, which is good.
Yeah, I think she is. I think because in a way that they've given her a bit more, not just kind of like, because like one of the things that they did to kind of show what she was doing in like the 18th century was just like getting her to invent things.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels now it's more like they've given her a bit more agency, and also she's not just having children or.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Or so like helping.
It feels like they've given her a bit more kind of like, what do I want my path to be? What do I want?
Yeah. And because like, we were almost.
I think that's good.
Because we almost left that with her before she went into the past, where she was trying to figure that pathway out, and she was like, "Oh, you know, maybe it isn't history," and she was trying to like decipher that, and now we're back where she feel like she's, you know, she's got so much more like life experience with meeting her father and seeing them together and things like that. But yeah, and you had another hate as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is a very petty one, but it did annoy me, which was obviously delighted that Adzo is not dead. Obviously delighted, always glad when a pet survives. But then they decide to just leave it in the wilderness, in the forest, where it will, you know, as evidence shows, wreak havoc on the natural population of the forest. So she's like, you know, oh, just eat the mice and the birds. Or alternatively, Claire, why don't you just say, devastate this ecosystem like white settlers did to America when they landed?
Yeah, no, that's true.
Is the cat some kind of metaphor for European settlers devastating, you know, the buffalo, et cetera, of the American plains?
So that, yeah, that was my main thing, that just the decision to leave Adso in the woods.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I was just like, well, give it to Lizzie.
Exactly, just go. I know it might mean a 5 hours ride, even though it's half a mile. But take it back.
Yeah, it can't be that far. Yeah, that was funny. But yeah, so yes, I think strap in for the next few episodes with the
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot to come. But we did have a few fashion stuff.
Yeah.
As well, that we liked. Yeah. Especially given now we're in a new decade as well.
Yeah, we've got a new decade to get our teeth into.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think the big one for me was, you know, Jamie back in his tartan and his kilt.
Mm-hmm.
I've been quite liking Claire's kind of, I'm going to call it like a double-breasted blue shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. She's worn that a few times, but I like it.
Yeah. I liked Breeze Cardi in the opening scene of episode 4. But I am excited to see what the ages are back. I noticed it was like one of the last scenes is when Bree and Roger are sitting on these fabulous armchairs. They're like real mid-century armchairs.
They're doing some nice interior work.
Really nice. I basically just want all of it. The sideboards, everything. I know it's not fashion, but...
No, but it is. I mean, it's the same as me liking the glassware from seasons 1 and 2. But I think the 80s, I think at the moment, I feel like they're playing it very safe.
Yeah.
With what they're wearing, they're playing it very safe.
Definitely. And it's quite American as opposed to what I would imagine people in Scotland would wear. I'm not in the 80s, but maybe
I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to offend half of our listenership, and then we'll lose half of our listenership. But I think British people are a bit more cutting edge.
Yeah.
In terms of fashion. I know Roger and Brie aren't, but I think we're a bit more cutting edge. I think they would be a bit more fashionable.
Yeah, Brie anyway.
Yeah. Because she's still really young.
Yeah, really young. And she wore some like pretty trendy stuff when she was in the Boston.
60s. I know she'll be in her 30s now, but she, you know.
Yeah, young. Very.
It'll be interesting to see how their 80s clothes play out.
Yeah, anyway. I did like her. She's wearing the Lee denim shirt, and I was wondering, it was very obviously a Lee because it had the brand on it.
Yeah,
and that was the first time
introducing some good classic denim.
Yeah, I was wondering is that the first time we've ever seen something branded in the show? It must be, because how else would you present any branding?
Actually. Yeah.
There's no real product placement, obviously, because of the timing. And it was the interior design. They were drinking coffee at one stage. I loved their coffee mugs. Like, they're proper, like, ceramic. And, like, there was one with, like, a real mid-century pattern on it. I was like, oh, God. Yeah. I love a mug. I'm obsessed with mugs. And their armchairs were amazing, and the sideboard in their living room, I think it's got like some booze in it or something. But yeah, I'll talk more about the furniture as we go on, and no doubt. Another thing I put down, but I can't really remember it now, was seeing William not in a red coat was just nice.
I think that was when he was being on his. That was when he was on his secret mission.
Oh, was it?
I don't know why I'm laughing about it being a secret mission, but
secret mission, not in a red. That was just something.
That was him undercover.
Yeah, that's it. Undercover William. I'm not sure it'll bring any depth to his character, but it was a little bit different. And I thought Rachel's bonnets were quite sweet.
I'm not a fan of the bonnets, I won't lie.
I've never really liked them on babies and stuff. I find them weird.
I don't love a bonnet.
I thought they were just...
I could never be Amish, put it that way.
No. The embroidery and stuff.
Is the bonnet a requirement? Or is it optional?
Yo, how do we feel about how, I know, is this going to be really offensive? But I was really, when they first came on the scene, I was like, oh, why are they talking that way? And then it was like, oh, because I didn't realize they say, oh, we're Quakers.
And yeah, they're like, Quakers, but yeah, I don't know if how they speak is supposed to be about them being a Quaker. I don't know. I was trying to figure that out because he says "the" a lot.
The, yeah, he's like, would thee like to do such and such?
And is that supposed to be a Quakerism?
Yeah,
I wasn't sure about that.
Get thyself off the table, and I was like, yeah. Oh, what's happening now?
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that either. Because obviously Quakers, it's a religion. They're not from. And this is really. They're not from a particular part of the country, as far as I'm aware. So I don't see why you would have a particular kind of vocabulary.
Yeah.
But hey, any Quakers who are listening, or any people who are very familiar with Quaker history, please do let us know.
Yeah.
Why they're. Vocabulary is very different to everybody else's.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just
no snarky emails saying things like "just Google it," because obviously we know we can just Google it.
Yeah, we want to hear from you guys. So do tell us if you're enjoying these episodes as much as we are, and if we've missed anything.
Yeah,
I feel like we've delved into a lot of it.
If you're loving William, and you know, or more importantly, tell us if you're hating Roger. Always love a message about hating Roger.
Oh God, we especially love them
if we have changed your mind.
Yes,
and you've become a hater. That's you know, that's kind of the mission statement for this podcast, is turning more people into Roger haters.
Yes.
So get in touch. We always want to hear from you all.
Please do. And our next episode 19 will be the next two episodes, which is Singapore and Where the Waters Meet. So if you guys want to, you know, catch up on that, please do. And it'll be out in another 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
So we look forward to speaking about it then.
Talking about the next few episodes with you all. See you soon.
See you soon.